Welcome to the Nutrigenomics Nutrition Module. It's really about the nutrients and what some of the genes are that affect the nutrients and how you can determine who's at risk for particular nutrient imbalances. So before we begin, let's make sure that you are completely aware that this presentation is not meant to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. And if you are doing this sort of presentation with your clients, make sure that they're aware of that as well. So let's just review a little bit about how we looked at the nutrients in the blood and the history. There weren't any particular, like, look at this particular marker and that tells you if there's a B6 deficiency or whatnot, because the serum is actually not the best place to be testing for nutrient imbalances. But what we did in the blood chemistry module was that we talked about the different markers that could indicate that there was the suggestion of imbalances. Some of them we measure directly. Sometimes people measure folate or B12. We certainly measure vitamin D directly. We measure iron and calcium, although calcium is not a nutritional marker in the blood. It's a marker of cardiac function and electrolyte balance. But there's those things to do. But there's a lot of indirect. When we look at the nutrigenomics, the genetic factors, we can actually identify things that impact the way that nutrients are absorbed, the way that nutrients are circulated, and the effects on specific genetics that affect the absorption at the receptor level. The assessments, we gave you a set of assessments to use to determine, are there potentially nutrient imbalances? So you can look at the symptoms of the nutrient imbalance and get an assessment scorecard. And the way that you can use this together is that you can look at those assessments and then look at the blood and then look in the genetics, which is what we're going to talk about today. The other thing we talked about in those assessments is that really nice way to do it, a nice part of this process is to make sure you know what they're eating. You know what they're taking in. You know if their foods are deficient in certain nutrients, vitamins, and minerals, and then you can assess and support them in increasing the foods that they need to do and also in replenishing. So let's jump in now and start to look at some of the nutrient-related genes. This is a list that I made from various sources and various reports. It's not complete in and of itself. It's just the major ones. There are other markers, other genetic markers that you can find, and I'll show you a report from Genetic Life Hacks, which has the most comprehensive one that I know about. These are taken from the genetic detoxification mostly. So let's just quickly run through these. BCMA1. Affects the conversion from beta carotene into vitamin A. So someone with some SNPs in the BCMA1 is going to have difficulty converting from beta carotene to A, which means that if they're eating a ton of beta carotene containing foods like, you know, carrots and lots of vegetables and peppers and all that, that they actually could turn yellow in the skin pigmentation because it's not being converted into vitamin A. And a simple approach to this is to supplement just in case. They may or may not need it, but supplement with vitamin A just in case. And there's a bunch of micellized brands that you can get. And one drop is 5,000 IUs. And unless they have major SNPs here, like all whole bunch of homozygous, then I usually just recommend 5 to 10,000 a day in supplementation. For B2, riboflavin, MTHFR is a good indication. There's also some others that we'll look at when we look at the Genetic Life Hacks report. For vitamin B6 is NPBF3, and that affects the absorption of vitamin B6. So if you're working with somebody who has a lot of neurotransmitter problems, who has a lot of hormone problems, they're likely low in B6, and you would want to look to see if they're at risk for B6 deficiency based on their genes. Vitamin B12, there's a number of them. We think about MTHFR, but it's not really MTHFR because that's folate. It's really MTR and MTRR, and those are at a different point in the methylation cycle, which we'll look at in more detail in one of our other videos. And when those are off, we may not be able to methylate the B12. Another one that's related to B12 is one we talked about in the digestion area, which is FUT2. And that has to do with the secretion of blood type into the mucous membranes. Remember, we said that could affect B12 absorption. And some studies show that B12 is improved for non-secretors, and some show that it's less for non-secretors. I see more that for non-secretors, meaning those people who don't secrete their blood type into their mucous membranes, they're more likely to be okay in B12 status. But again, you want to look at these in the big picture. And then there's TNC1 and 2. For folate B9, we have the famous MTHFR. For people who don't know much about genetics, they have heard of at least MTHFR. There's also DHFR, and there's also the folate receptors, FOLR1, 2, and 3. So if their pathways are okay, but their receptors aren't, the actual methylated B9 is not going to get into their cells as well. Vitamin C, we have SLC23A1. For zinc, we have SLC30A8. And for iron, HFE and TF. And that's really for iron overload. And there's several RSIDs for HFE. And we learn a lot about that from Dr. Christy Sutton, who's the founder of the genetic detoxification. And she's done a tremendous amount of research. And she's reported that at some of our conferences where she's spoken, but also in her book, The Iron Curse. Magnesium, TRPM7. If you have somebody who's taking lots of magnesium, eating a lot of magnesium-rich foods, and they're still showing signs of magnesium deficiency, you want to look here and show them, well, you're going to need more magnesium. Even though you're taking 500, 700, 1,000 even milligrams a day, you may need more because of this genetic predisposition. So vitamin D-related SNPs, we have the VDR. And there's several of those. There's FAQ and a couple, and I'll show you on the next slide where you can see some of these. But the VDR is the vitamin D receptor. So if somebody's taking a lot of vitamin D or they're getting a lot of sun, but the receptors aren't working, they're going to continue to show low vitamin D on their lab report. Then we have GC, which is that big long RSID I won't read, encodes an enzyme that transports the D into the blood cells. This is important. So if you're seeing signs of vitamin D deficiency, if you're seeing folks who have autoimmune diseases, thyroid conditions, and their vitamin D is just seems to be low, or they seem to have symptoms, even though the blood level isn't that low, it could be that they have problems in the receptors or encoding and bringing the D into the cells. CYP24A1 has a role in maintaining calcium homeostasis, which of course we know that vitamin D is important there. CYP27B1, that encodes an enzyme that activates the D so that D can be brought into the system, but it has to be activated. Usually that happens in the kidneys and the liver. It has to be activated to the 1,25-dihydroxy-D3. DHCR7, it's a switch between cholesterol and vitamin D synthesis, because we know that we make vitamin D from a cholesterol steroid. It's actually a hormone. The GRCH38 is a vitamin D binding protein. So it binds to and carries the D around in the system. So any of these that are off can cause problem with vitamin D. And we have to be aware of that and be testing the D and being more conscientious in coaching people who have some of these SNPs. So this is the actual report from genetic detoxification. It shows the same ones that I showed already. There's two different versions of the VDR receptor, BSM and TAQ. You can see in this particular case, there's a whole bunch of RSIDs for the vitamin A. And in this particular case, the person has more imbalances than wild type, right? Three heterozygous, one homozygous, and only two of the normal. In this particular case, zinc is a problem. And, you know, zinc is interesting because, yeah, you can have a genetic problem where the zinc is not going to be utilized and absorbed real well. But on the other hand, you can have the genes okay, but there's an epigenetic factor. And there were some studies that showed that when female rats were deprived of zinc during pregnancy, their offspring were born with zinc deficiency. Yeah, of course, we would expect that, right? But then when those babies were fed zinc sufficient diets and supplemented and didn't show any clinical signs of zinc deficiency, their babies were still born with a zinc deficiency. And it went down three or four generations, which means that the zinc imbalance can be passed on not just genetically, but epigenetically. There's a few more here. There's your iron, the HFE. There's a third HFE that is on the newer report. But if you get it like really recently, within the last month or so, There's vitamin B9. There's all the ones that I showed you. There's B12. And then there's vitamin C. So these are some of the major SNPs related to nutrition. And it's easy enough to look at each of these, compare it to their labs, compare it to their history or their scorecards that you've done, and just make a list of the top nutrients that you're concerned about. We don't have to go into extensive detail, but what I want to do is show you a couple of other documents that will show more detail about the nutrients if you want to go into more detail. If you're concerned about a specific nutrient imbalance that isn't in the genetic detoxification, let's look at the Genetic Life Facts report. This is the nutrient report. You have to have a pro account to get this. So if you don't already have one, then I just included this report so you can get to see. I've also included all the reports so you get to see how good these reports are. But it gives you, it's really nice because it gives you the gene and then it gives you what it's doing, like 40 to 70% decrease in MTHFR enzyme function. Then if you want to learn more about it, you can click here. And it'll take you to the articles that describe it. So, and if you put your client's data in there, it will show you what they, you can read about it, and then it'll show you what their genotype is for that. So it's a nice report. You don't need it to do these initial conversations with people based on their genes in their labs, but it certainly is a helpful thing to have for you, for your reference, for your learning. And that's why we've included copies of some of these. Yeah, so here you have MTHFR and the B12 we talked about, but I only showed you one in the genetic detoxification report. There's only one, but there's a whole bunch related to riboflavin. So if you're suspicious about riboflavin, for whatever reason, you know, Krebs cycle stuff, their metabolomics test showed some issues, you're suspicious of it, then, or thyroid issues, because riboflavin is so important for that, you can look these up. This is extra advanced information. It is not stuff that you have to be doing. I think that all you need to do is get the genetic detoxification report and the functional blood chemistry, and you put those together and you can do an amazing session on that and help people to see, oh, they need to work with you. Now, you may want to get into more of this detail as you work with people and you find that they have complicated cases, but you don't have to. I just wanted to show you that there's more to it. There's a whole bunch of B6s. There's more B7, biotin, some extra stuff on zinc, thiamine, B1, which isn't in the genetic detoxification, choline, BCMA1, like the other vitamin D, folic acid conversion, selenium. So there's just so many others that are here that you can be looking up. It also has some of the stuff which we're going to get to next in the presentation, is some of the sensitivities that people have to specific food constituents. So this shows some of the SNPs that may make somebody more prone to have histamine intolerance, oxalate intolerance, saturated fat intolerance, tyramine, alcohol, amylase. I don't know, that's not really in food. It's really, it's an enzyme that the pancreas produces, mushrooms. So there's all kinds of stuff here. Some of them are related directly, some of them are not, but there's just a lot related to food and a lot related to the nutrients. So it's worthwhile to take a look at that at your leisure. So the other report that I wanted to share with you related to nutrient, diet, and nutrition is Self-Decode. And again, this is when you want to get into more detail, when you're actually in a program with somebody, when you're concerned about certain things and you want to look up. This is just a lot of more in-depth stuff that you can look at. What about protein in this person? What about fat? It helps you to help them to design their macronutrients, carbohydrates, breakdown of fat, saturated omega-3, unsaturated. Okay, so all of this stuff. So it's just good information and it's a good learning opportunity. That's why I'm including it. Please don't feel like you have to do this in order to do a successful blood chem gene analysis, because you don't. You just need to have some basics. And what I really want you to figure out is when someone is complaining of certain symptoms, or they have a family history of certain conditions, or they have a personal history of certain conditions, and they have some labs, you want to be able to look at the genes to see what's going on there. Or if they don't have the symptoms yet, but they have a lot of in their family history. You want to see, is this person at risk? So these are just advanced strategies. Like if you wanted to do a follow-up to your blood chemistry and you want to do an advanced genetic report where you go through everything with them, which could take hours and lots of your time, so you got to charge enough, you can use these reports to help you do that. Okay. I don't find that these reports are great for sharing with people just because they can get them overwhelmed. Depends on the person. So here's some stuff on food allergies. So this is just a lot of stuff on food. There's 35 pages here, lactose, histamine, caffeine sensitivity, salt sensitivity, et cetera, et cetera. You can use these to help you in defining and creating a customized nutrition plan, based on their genes, based on their symptoms, based on their goals. So this is down the road, but this is what you might be considering for your long-term plan with people. We just looked at the genetic life hacks and the self-decode detailed nutrition things. So let's look at in general. These are the ones that I look at most. If I'm trying to help myself put together a plan for somebody, I can look at bitter taster, sweet taster, and you know, you're not going to give a bitter taster like to drink 2 cups of kale juice every day. You know what I mean? With the sweet taster, you might be helping them to add things like more stevia or lohan to their stuff. If they can tolerate fruit, you can add fruit, but some people don't because of their blood sugar. If they're salt sensitive, this means that they may have a tendency for salt to increase their blood pressure, and that's not good. And then we have alcohol intolerance. You know, people who just want to have their cup of wine every day, and you can explain to them why that's not such a great idea. If they have these SNPs, they're not going to detoxify it. It's going to burn liver. It's going to hurt their brain. So this is a chart that I put together, a summary chart. You've got multiple pages of this. It's got the most common ones, the one from genetic detoxification, the vitamin and mineral SNPs. And I did these charts, and you got these for just about every one of the categories that we're going through. You got the genes and the variants, the RSID, the risk allele. So it's all in one place. The function, like what does it do at a glance? It's not the complete detail, but it's good for a summary. And then the health risks of having this particular SNP. And then what should we do to protect them against this? And that can be used for you to be putting into your follow-up plans. So here's some of the food avoidance. Like if somebody has some of these SNPs, you want to have them avoid or at least minimize the intake of certain food constituents. So we've got gluten. These are some of the ones associated with people who should be gluten-free. And I will tell you, these genes are motivating. I've had people who I've been talking to for years about going gluten-free because of their health conditions. When we did the genes and they looked, they went, oh, I guess you were right. I do need to go gluten-free. Dairy-free, there's things related to lactose and other constituents in the dairy. Do they have to have an anti-yeast or antifungal type diet? The FUT2, which we talked about before, but these are others. You can look up every single one of these genes to see if somebody has it by looking at their raw data. And I showed you on a previous presentation that even though you're not downloading it, hopefully by the time of you listening to this, we will be able to download again, but you can still search for particular ones and you can find them in self-decode and also in genetic life hacks. So I personally like to have multiple accounts that I can look things up in. I'm a constant learner. I want to learn and learn and learn. And there's no one service. There's no one testing service. There's no one service that provides reports that is, you know, the be all and the end all and has everything. So I do a lot of research in a lot of different places. Does everybody need to be low oxalate? You'd read some of these books and they think that oxalate is the worst thing in the world. And in fact, it's a small percentage of the population. But if the person has some of these SNPs, and especially if they also have a history of kidney stones or gritty eyes or vulvodynia, then for sure you want to have them try a low oxalate diet. Low salicylates. We find that salicylates became popular or heard of in the mainstream by Dr. Feingold, who associated them with ADD, so attention deficit disorder and compulsivity. Phenols, right? Phenols. In our NEPT program, those of you who are in the full program, on level two, we have a whole module on all these different food religions, as I call them. There's probably 25 hours worth of education in there. Like, what are they? What do they mean? What foods are high in them? What foods are low in them? And how can you support people who should be on them, who should be off of them? And then the sulfur. People who say, I can't eat garlic. I just can't eat garlic. It gives me a headache. It makes me feel weird. And onions too. They probably have some of these sulfur snips. And those are things you can look up and you can become the hero that helps them when nobody else was able to. There are advanced labs that you can use to back some of these things up. You know, the serum test, vitamin D, vitamin A may be okay in serum. There's very few that are really accurate in serum. Red blood cells, a whole bunch are really good in red blood cells, like red blood cell magnesium. That's the best way to measure that. There's a bunch that are good in white blood cells, right? There's a Spectra cell, which does leukocyte activity, so white blood cell activity. The NutriVal or Ion are also metabolomics that have functional, not just how much is there, but how much is functional. So for example, methylmalonic acid is functionally the way you would measure for a B12 deficiency and organic acid. So these are some of the advanced tests. We go through all of these tests in detail in NEPT, our Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training Program. For those of you who are not already members, if you are and you've been through some of these modules, know that it takes going through things like this several times and then practice. There's also a test from Vibrant America, which goes through and it tests whichever compartment has been found to be best, serum, red blood cell, or white cell. So you might want to look at that more advanced. We do have a module on that in NEPT. So what do you do if you find nutrient imbalance SNPs? Well, you don't just assume that because somebody has a vitamin A SNP that they are going to have a problem with vitamin A. I typically would track their usual diet for 5 days. I like Chronometer. There are others, FitDay and all kinds of stuff, but I like Chronometer the best. I like it partially because it allows you to really look at what they're eating and adapt it. You know, there's all kinds of great techniques that you can use to hover over a food or hover over a nutrient that looks low and help them to see, oh, you're already eating broccoli. All you have to do is add a cup of broccoli additional and you're going to get this much more of this nutrient. So there's some great ways with that. But I also like it because I can set up my high-end clients in Chronometer and I can actually peek on them, spy on them, and I get them to put their stuff in and I can look at it at any time and then be really equipped when I have another call with them. You want to look at the nutrients that scored high on the symptom surveys. So if you look at the, like, say, oh, no, B7, biotin, shows up like, oh, this might be a problem based on the scorecards, then you can go back to Chronometer and say, huh, they're just not getting enough in their diet. Or, yeah, they are, but they must have a SNP. Then you can look at the SNPs. Depends on, I mean, that this is stuff you're going to do once you have them in your program. So I'm getting a little ahead, but I want you to see the potential of looking at this and the ways that you can support people. Yes, in the short one, the starter session, so to speak, where it's going to be you looking at their genes and looking at their labs and looking at their symptoms, and then coming up with what you think their next steps should be and offering them a program. You don't have to go into all of this. You don't want to go into all of this depth because you'll lose them and they'll go, oh, I have enough. I don't need to work with you, right? So you need to utilize this and the knowledge of this, and then you can formulate your program, which we'll talk about in a later part of this program. All right, determine foods to add to the diet and make up balance, and then supplement however you need to supplement. I usually start with food. I just gave you this. This is just a little, how do you do this? Here's some of the foods that contain some of the nutrients that they may be found to be deficient in, etc. This is just some extra goodies for you. SNPs related to oxalates, SNPs related to salicylates. It's just laid out in an easier way than seeing it on everything else. SNPs related to FODMAPs, SNPs related to lectin. Everybody is out there just kind of following Dr. Gundry and saying everybody needs to be off of lectins. So lectins are important food constituents. And some people do need to reduce those for a while and clean them up to help them get over some of the symptoms. And here's some of the genes. If they have these lectin genes, they may be needing to use it. And then histamine, right? If somebody's like, they're getting red after they eat, this is why it's so, so important to be asking questions. If they're getting red after they eat, if they are telling you that, you know, they have weepy eyes and itchy skin, they may have a histamine intolerance. And so this is something for them to look at. So that's what I have for you in the food and nutrients section of the nutrigenomics. There's so much to learn, and we've given you a start here. You have the resources here that we've given you to jump in and go deeper and deeper and deeper, depending on the client. Every tough case gives you learning opportunities, and I hope you take them.